HFD has just released internal audio communication tapes that document how firefighters approached the fire and the challenges they faced. That fire raged for more than 4 hours, and at one point, as HFD was trying to get replacement oxygen tanks to their firefighters, the truck with the supplies breaks down on the side of the highway. Logistically, that's the last thing you need to happen while trying to get the fire under control. Let's listen to a string of clips illustrating other conditions HFD was dealing with that day.
Do you have a report on the fire conditions on the 27th floor?
Yes.
Heavy flames and smoke shooting out of the Malco balcony.
Engine 7 copy, thank you. Command from Engine 7, we have one conscious female patient. We need to bring her out of the building. We're using a central stairway at this time. Elevator controls. Is the elevator operating at this time?
Cap, this is lobby control. Elevator is not operating. That's negative. No elevator service available.
HFD Captain Scott Segarant joins us live in the studio for a look at some of the behind-the-scenes drama that unfolded. So, Captain, what are some of the other challenges that you folks faced that day?
Well, there was a lot of different challenges that we faced that day. First and foremost was late notification of the fire. So when you're at the fire station and somebody knocks on the door and then calls you out of the station to show you from the corner of the street that there's a fire raging and there's flames shooting out of the windows, that's really late notification.
Right. And usually people see it, they call 911, but in this particular case, our fire station, which was just like a couple blocks away, that's how they heard about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So normally with a alarm system that's functioning properly, everyone is notified early. Occupants are notified early so they can get out, and the fire department is notified so that they can respond effectively.
Right. So I think over the last 6 months, maybe that fact about the notification was kind of lost in all the details that were unfolding week after week. I know your chief had said earlier this week that he thought that you could have lost some firefighters that day. Let's play another clip illustrating what happens when firefighters on a high floor get separated and the fear is that they're in danger. We're going to be listening to a Mayday distress call.
Mayday, Mayday, Mayday from Staging Alpha. We got firefighters in the...
And for a while there, the transmission goes silent, and you can only imagine what was playing out there. A short time later, we hear this.
Edit 7 Echo, did you declare an emergency? Is there any company declaring an emergency on B2 Attack 3?
Fire dispatch from Ladder 7, Staging Eva. We declared an emergency, but we retrieved all personnel from the 27th floor.
So what was going on there at that time? You know, what can you share with us?
Well, at that time, it's very difficult. You have flames, you have smoke, you have limited visibility. There's a lot of heat. And if you can't account for your personnel, that's one of the things that we are trained to do, is to declare a mayday.
And tell us, in that specific instance, do you know what was going on? You know, where were the firefighters?
That specific instance, I'm not sure. But it is a gut-wrenching situation when you're in there, especially as a captain or as a firefighter, knowing that something is wrong and you can't account for your personnel. That's very bad, very bad.
And tell us, what are the other criteria for declaring a mayday? Who can do that? What you know, to all of us listening here, explain that. It's a call for help.
Absolutely. Anyone can declare a mayday based on a need. So it could be an individual who finds himself trapped, disoriented, or maybe something fell on them. Any type of situation that they need help, they're declaring to everyone and saying, hey, I need help. But it could also be a captain, or it could be somebody else reporting on something that happened to a crew. It just depends on the specifics at that time.
What other stories can you share with us where that actually happened, where someone got separated?
So we had a separation and another mayday that was declared in the evacuation group. So these folks were assigned to evacuate occupants from the building, and they were escorting patients down to the 24th floor, and they would go back up and look for more and bring them back down. And as they were coming down, luckily without a patient at that time, there was a big blast of fire that came through the hallway into the stairwell and actually cut off that crew. So it separated the crew. And that fire blast is kind of what's referred to as like a blowtorch effect from the wind pushing the fire from the unit into the hallway, into the stairwell. And just imagine now that crew gets separated. And the crew that's above them has no idea what happened to the firefighter that went below. So that's very traumatic in a sense of you're concerned about your personnel. I mean, you eat with them, you live with them, one-third out of the year. And now you have no idea what's happened to that person.
Right, and you folks work 24-hour shifts, right?
Yep, 24-hour shifts. Basically, again, a third of the year. You're with them. That's your family for one-third of your career.
And when you're in a situation where it's a life or death event, you know, you're charged with trying to control the fire and protecting lives. And then you might be in a situation where one of your colleagues, your coworkers, is in jeopardy.
Absolutely. So that's worst case scenario. We try to train for that. We do train for that. But nobody knows how they react to that until it actually happens to them.
Right. And not too long ago, we had another high-rise fire, the first interstate fire. And in that case, that happened during a weekend. It was an office building, not a residential tower like Marco Polo is. And since then, since the Marco Polo fire, we've seen other fatal fires on the mainland where many lives were lost. And in some instances, the fire broke out in the evening. And so I know folks are wondering, you know, we did have four lives lost in Marco Polo, but the situation could have been different. It could have been much higher.
Absolutely. And it really, as bad as losing what we lost there was, it could have been a lot worse. And that's one of the things that when you're analyzing your own actions and your performance, you realize that despite those losses, which are significant and are not to be taken lightly, it could have been a lot worse. If it wasn't for the efforts of the firefighters that were there, putting their lives in harm's way to save others, it would have been way worse.
If I recall the interstate fire, I think there were a couple firefighters that might have been injured. You know, there's fumes you're dealing with. And in that case, they had to walk up, I don't know how many flights of stairs, just to begin fighting the fire. And that's with all the equipment that you've got on your back.
Absolutely. It's a lot of equipment. It's heavy. I mean, you do train for it. But to go through that experience and get to the top of that 24th floor, and you're tired, and then now you got to get an assignment and go do it. That's tough. So you're trying to get up there as fast as you can, but you can't get up there and then you need to take a 2-minute break to catch your breath. So you're pacing yourself and you're trying to move as fast as you can to be able to be functional once you get up there.
Right, and then firefighters that find themselves in a dangerous situation, where you're faced with, do I put out a Mayday call? You know, explain to us what that means. You know, like, do you have a special units that set aside to deal with Mayday calls? Because, you know, you're in the midst of fighting a fire.
Absolutely. And we do have an assigned group that is a rapid intervention team. But it depends on resources at that time. When you're looking at trying to evacuate people out of floors that are right above the fire, you have to prioritize. And that's the decision of the incident commander and the team to make. And if you're going to send people to evacuate patients, you might not have a writ in place. So you have to make those choices at that time. But we do normally have a writ team in place. And as resources get there, you're trying to effect that. So that's the question you need to ask. Am I going to put my RIT team in place in case something goes wrong for my firefighters? Or am I going to send that first unit up to try to evacuate people that are immediately in danger?
When you say RIT team, what does that mean?
Rapid Intervention Team. That's the group that's assigned to be the help when the Mayday is called.
Okay, and did we have that in place, or were we just overwhelmed?
We did have it in place. I don't exactly know at what portion we had that in place. I know our rescue team is primarily assigned that task because they're the absolute professionals in that. Our whole department is trained to that level, and in fact, that was the training that I was at in that morning into the afternoon, attending our RIT training. So it's provided and it's out there. But again, when you have a fire that's so overwhelming, it's so resource needed, you have so many occupants that can't get out on their own, you have a fire that's lapping up, that's fully developed, and you're trying to get ahead of it, it's difficult.
You shared with me earlier that that training that you were in was kind of an intense thing in the morning, and you folks had worked through lunch and were about ready to knock off, and then the Marco Polo fire was called. And so you folks were already tapped and then had to go on scene.
Absolutely. But we weren't the only ones that had experienced that. Ideally, you know, you want to go to a big fire fresh and ready for anything. But we know as firefighters, anything can happen. If you exercise at the station and let's say you went for a run, right after that you could get a call. So we're aware of that. We hope for the best, but we plan for the worst.
And are there any other stories you can share just about the efforts that went on that day? I know when we were out there covering that story, the incident commander, there was a question about whether he needed to get relieved because no one imagined that this fire would burn for as long as it did. And I think they did bring in someone else to give him a break. And as he was trying to do that, he realized this is too big of a fire to just hand off to someone else. And I think they worked it together.
They did. And when you're in the scene and you're in the moment, you're doing the best that you can, you're trained, but it is mentally taxing also, trying to keep track of everything that's going on. But it's even harder to hand it off now. How do you relay every single detail that you don't even remember that you know? That's why I think he declined.
Right, because if I recall, numerous times he was asked, do you need a break? You know, do you need to get spelled?
Yeah. No, excellent. He did an excellent job, but people are helpful. You know, they're trying to be helpful. Do you need a break? Do you need something else? A lot of times guys are going to, they want to do the job. You know, you look at Tom Brady, for example. He's having a hard game. He doesn't get pulled out of the game. He continues on and keeps working and does his job. The coach doesn't come in and play for Tom Brady. So I think in the same situation, I think if he needed a break, if he was totally overwhelmed where he physically couldn't do it, maybe he would have asked for help. But there was help at the scene. Different facets of help came in. We did have help with our evacuation group. We had operations run certain things in staging and operations, logistics. So there was help, but he's the incident commander. He has that responsibility, and he decided to maintain command.
Right, and he was praised for his efforts. And we understand he's retired.
Yes, he is. Yeah, yes, he is. And it was planned. It wasn't result of this.
Okay, all right. Is there anything else you can share with us just about, you know, the camaraderie after going through a fire like that and then what happens going forward?
Well, that's why the fire service is so respected amongst themselves. Even firefighters from other places that come here, there's a level of respect because we know they're doing the same thing that we're doing where they're from. And everybody knows you're relying on that next person in order to get home. And that's the difference in a lot of jobs for what we do. And I remember the atmosphere up there. It was a little more quiet than normal. Sometimes you're at a fire and you haven't seen someone in a long time. You either came in with them or you were stationed with them before. And there's a little quick reunion. Hey, how are you doing? I haven't seen you in a while. How's your children? This and that. Wasn't that much there in this fire because everybody knew how serious it was.
Right, and you knew that everybody had your back.
We knew that we had each other's back, But we also knew that this was a big, serious fire. And the realization of something going wrong was there. It All was right. really there.
Well, Captain Segarant, thank you very much for sharing the story behind what went on that day and underscoring the risk that our first responders take every day. Thank you very much.
Thank you.